Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. Hey, Seth, we had someone in the chat say that what CJ was probably saying when he called Marvin Harrison Jr. a worldly talent is probably meant otherworldly talent.
Oh, good call there.
Good job. Good job, chatter. That's a good,
otherworldly talent. Yes, good job. Good job.
Way to go.
I wonder where he, that's pretty good. You know what? That's a pretty good adjective for really good adjective for a 22, 23 year old kid to be using.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe CJ's been reading in the off season.
Well,
otherworldly isn't like a common, I don't think that's like that's not on my list of slang for, to catch up on with the youth.
No, otherworldly? You know? No.
Yeah.
No. He's definitely been reading because he said I've been reading these draft guides that say that he's the most NFL ready. But he didn't say draft guys, but he said, I've been reading that Marvin Harrison is more NFL ready, but these other guys have potential. CJ, welcome to Draft Nick World. Okay. So D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday. And I would say if there's an area of criticism for the Texans right now in the offseason, it's that the interior of the defensive line doesn't feel like it's been upgraded necessarily, just purely talent for talent, right?
Yeah.
Malik Collins traded for a 7th-round pick. Sheldon Rankins, who did some good things last year, he leaves. You bring in some journeyman types in Foley Fatakasi and Tim Settle, and you've got some guys still in the room like Khalil Davis and Kurt Heinisch. It feels a little unfinished. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday on what the Texans are looking for in defensive tackles.
With our defensive tackles position, what we're looking for, we play in an attack style front, and we want guys who can attack. We want guys, you can do that no matter the size, right? You talk about, is there a certain size you're looking for? I've seen guys do it at 280, 290, seen guys do it at 315. So there's a different range for different types of players. It's all about our guys just being explosive up front and being able to do what we're asking them to do.
Okay. So he doesn't have a type, Seth, he claims.
He doesn't have a type, except that he did mention the range 285 to 315. I feel like for anybody that was really, really hoping for T'Vondre Sweat, you're about 40 pounds outside the range right there. I don't know if T'Vondre Sweat's gonna cut. I do. I like T'Vondre Sweat and the way he plays a lot. He just flat out needs to lose at least 20 pounds.
Yeah.
But I don't need to beat that to death. I just don't. I think if they do take T'Vondre Sweat at some point, it'll be a little bit of a rhythm changer and different from what they typically do. But sometimes a rhythm changer is good. The whole he went into it another point too, where they talked about some of the draft day stuff, and he kind of coach speaked his way through it, where it was a mess. You know, like, frankly, like, they thought they were getting Eric Armstead back At some point, they were trying to re-sign Sheldon Rankins. They lost both of their starters without getting anything back in return. And I think they're still, they had looked at Eric Armstead, I'm guessing, as an upgrade over Malik Collins. So they end up not just without Eric Armstead, but without Malik Collins either.
Yeah.
And that's the one area where I'm thinking D'Amico, who wants to build with the front seven and with the defensive line specifically, I'm guessing he feels like he doesn't really have the difference maker that he wants or needs in there right now, that he wants somebody like Eric Armstead.
Yep. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Azeez El-Shaair, somebody he coached as his position coach in San Francisco, who is now coming here to play linebacker for the Texans.
By adding Azeez to our team, you guys see we're getting a tenacious player, a guy who plays with relentless passion, energy, physical. The thing with Azeez that stood out for me last year was his first time really getting the opportunity to play full time as a starter. And you know, he had been in a backup role when we were there in San Francisco for a while. And he showed that he was capable of running the show and showed that he was able to stay healthy throughout the entire year. So he's durable. He was a playmaker. He was physical. He was the leader of that defense. So excited to add, you know, not only Azeez as a player, but Azeez, the leader. And I think he's grown as a leader, and I'm excited to work with him again.
And he's wearing jersey number zero. He's agent zero. Yeah. Azeez El-Shaair.
That's right.
Yeah.
He wore number two last year, I believe.
Did he?
So yeah. he's accustomed to the non-typical, non-traditional numbers. I think I do think it's a smart move for linebackers. They end up looking faster than they actually are when they wear a skill position player number.
Yeah.
We saw that. It wasn't with Blake Cashman.
Denzel Perryman wore six.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the example you were looking for.
No, I was thinking of Garrett Wallow. What number is Garrett Wallow? He's 30-something.
He's like 32, I think.
Which I always, you know what it did with Garrett Wallow is he is very fast, but I thought he was smaller than he was.
Yeah.
There's something about that 30. He was wearing, especially because it's Tyrann Mathieu's number.
Yep.
So when you see, like, when the previous guy who had worn that number on your team, it'd be one thing if it was a huge hulking running back or something, but because he was wearing Tyrann Mathieu's number, I felt like Garrett Wallow was smaller than he actually was.
Yep.
I think with El-Shaair, The interesting thing here is, I don't know if you remember, Sean. I didn't want to make a huge deal out of it, but at the end of the season, there was an instance where somebody asked D'Amico Ryans a question about Blake Cashman, and it was like the classic, like, "Hey, isn't Blake Cashman awesome? How awesome has Blake Cashman been this year?" And D'Amico kind of, I'd say he slow played it in comparison to some of the other players that he's gushed about. And I would say even in comparison to the way he had talked about Blake Cashman previously, I think that there were some signs and indications as the year petered out that Cashman wasn't the exact guy that he wanted in there.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch El-Shaair, you see very much an old school linebacker and that, okay, this dude might as well have a crew cut or something. And he just wants to hit people and be mean to people and do all of these other things that old school linebackers do. That's what El-Shaair is, and I think he fits the mold of what D'Amico wants on his defense more so than some other guys.
It's the second time they tried to get him. They tried to get him last year. Like, he's coveted him here since he got here.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm El-Shaair. Like, if I were a woman and the guy was saying, like, yeah, well, I mean, I tried to get a hold of you, and like, you left a message on my answering machine once. Yeah, the Titans signed me for 1 year, $5 million. Yeah, you really went after me pretty hard, didn't you?
Okay.
Let's can it with the we went after you talk.
I didn't realize it was only $5 million that he made from the Titans last year, but that's a good sign.
It was a one-year deal, too. Yeah. Like, so it wasn't like that. If the Texans had really come after him, they could have gotten him.
Well, he's got 3 years, $34 million now, so they made up for it, Seth. All right, so if you were a woman, I would tell you, get over it, babe, okay?
Would you call me Toots?
A Toots. Listen, broad. all right, let's get one more from D'Amico. Ben, let's skip to 15 here. Man, the Texans are getting asked a lot about complacency and year two. There's a lot of people that are treating the Texans like they feel like they won the Super Bowl last year or something. But here was D'Amico Ryans talking about guarding against things going into year two of his.
The biggest thing I think, Kim, from year one to year two is you have to watch guys who've had a lot of success. Right, guys, you can't fall into a trap of that you've made it, right? Just because you have success in year one, that doesn't garner that you're going to instantly have success in year two. Right? You still have to put in even more work, right? Because now all you have a year worth of tendencies on tape. Other teams around the league are watching you. They're kind of honing in on what you do well. So how are you going to attack your offseason and truly focus on improving your craft and being better than you were in year one? Guys can't, you know, you can't fall asleep to, oh, I did it 1 year, it's easy, and you relax your second year. That's the biggest thing I've seen where guys kind of have that drop in their second years where they relax and they think they have that I made it moment. Nobody's ever made it. You continue to put the work in, you dive in even harder because you've had success.
I think if there's one area last year that really stuck out in terms of teams realizing what the offense was doing and what CJ liked to do, it was on a lot of those outs, those intermediate outs mm-hmm. to Nico Collins and to Tank Dell. You would see the window really start to close more and more on those. And it really came to a head in the Bengals game. I think that's when, like, CJ was lacing some beautiful and well-placed balls to the sideline, but the Bengals were all over him. And that's where, like, okay, what's the next step after that? Some of this relies upon your offensive line, but it's, you know, hitting guys with double moves when they start jumping routes and starting to see how teams are starting to game you. I think CJ did a good job with that. Mm-hmm. CJ saw the adjustments, then he saw the adjustments to the adjustments, and he kind of went through a whole syllabus over the course of last year with that. So I don't worry that he's going to advance along those lines, because there's no part of CJ that has that attitude of like, well, I've seen everything I need to see here. There's
no,
like, frankly, there's no Baker Mayfield to him. Like, Baker Mayfield, or like the worst case scenario would be Johnny Manziel, where there's like an unearned cockiness, like with no actual understanding of the troubles yet to come or the challenges that you'll face that you can't even comprehend at this point. CJ knows that there's a lot that he doesn't know.
Yeah.
So, I watched that Tom Brady podcast. Or the podcast he did with that little barber dude.
Yeah, Deep Cut podcast.
Yeah, with Vic Blends. And I think it must be Michael Rubin. That's the CEO of Fanatics, who's a common acquaintance of CJ. Because there was some saying that Tom Brady had said in there. He said, oh, one of my friends says this all the time. But it was something about, like, if you're not learning, you're dying or something like that. And CJ said the exact same thing at some point. Really left an impression on me, as you can tell, that I can't remember the exact term. But very much along those lines that you can never stop learning. Like, there's always, oh, that's what it is. The amount of things you know in comparison to the amount of things you don't know is, like, you have a very small number of things that you do know. The amount of things that you don't know is infinite. Mm-hmm. And you always have to keep that in mind, that there's always something more to learn. I've heard CJ say the same version of what Tom Brady had said. So thank you, Michael Rubin, for helping keeping our quarterback appropriately humble.
Yeah, I get the sense with CJ, too. He legit enjoys doing this stuff, learning this stuff. Like, it's a puzzle to him in a way. You know what I mean? Like, he...
Something else that Tom Brady had said about the entire time he played, he always had fun with it. It never felt like...
Did he really?
He admitted that he looked psychotic about it, and he was, but that he always... He just loved going and learning and being curious about learning more and everything. I think CJ's got that same
100%. I think that's CJ. Yeah. No question about it. Let's hit the phones here real quick and go to Stafford. Larry's there. What's going on, Larry? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Sean and Seth? Hey, let's do some housekeeping real quick. Number one, hey, Houston Rockets 41-41. Okay, now your ass is on the clock to get in the winning season and get in the playoffs. We tired of watching that old silly not going to the playoff basketball. I'm glad y'all had a good season. I like what y'all got over there. Y'all got some pieces that you can put to use to go out there and get us back to where we're supposed to be. Housekeeping thing number two. Jose Abreu sucks, man. And I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to watch him play baseball, man. I was at the game last night. And when he couldn't dig that ball out, man, I got so pissed off, man. And I threw everything that I had in my hands up in the air, man, because I can't figure out how this dude has fallen off this bad. And the fact that we let Yuli Gurriel go to pick him up and pay him that money. Jeff Bagwell, I heard you on the radio over the weekend. You didn't talk about your ass had a hand in that kind of stuff, man. That's a waste, man. It's just not even fun. And that at-bat he had yesterday, his first at-bat, I thought my son was trying to swing a bat, and he a pitcher. So I don't know what the hell was going on with Jose, but we could get over that, man, and find us a first baseman. Now, All of that out the way, them Houston Texans are back in town. And when them boys come back to town, that means I come back to town. Couple things. CJ, Oreo going to have a little life left, man, but we'll find you another dog because you're a dog. So we're going to be all right, man. Keep rubbing on Oreo over there. Keep enjoying that. He's your dog, man. But I understand, man, that them shit shoes and them little dog have a lifespan, man. Next. Did y'all see Joe Mixon walk into that damn stadium over there? He did not look like Devin Singletary. Joe Mixon looked like a running back, dog. And that got me excited over there because I could tell you, man, this running game, and if this offensive line hold up, we should have an explosive-ass offense over there, man, because we got the dude pulling the trigger, and that ain't got everything that they need on the offensive side of the ball in terms of wide receiver. We're going to be just fine. Hey, Houston Texans, I don't know why y'all ass ain't put Stephon Diggs' ass in front of a camera yet. I don't give a damn what he did in Minnesota and Buffalo. Stephon Diggs has come to Houston to try to get my boys to the Super Bowl. Let his ass get in front of that camera so that y'all can ask him a couple of questions. He's going to be all right, man. He is not going to tear up a locker room that has CJ Stroud in it and Deke D'Amico Ryan's watching over it. Last thing before I let y'all go. If y'all ass has a problem with them uniforms when they come out, man, because we get new uniforms. Look, I'm an OG, man. I like the classic style and everything. But your ass got to move into the 21st century. If you still only doing missionary position with your old lady, that's what you feel about them old silly-ass uniforms not being changed, man. Them uniforms are going to be hitting like butter on toast, man, and I can't wait to get released. And as a member of the fan council, your boy, I already seen him, and you know I like him, so y'all know what's going down in our hall.
I appreciate you, Larry. Yeah, uniform reveal a week from today.
So. To recap Larry's call,
yes.
The Rockets are 41-41, and that's good. Jose Abreu sucks. We, as a fan base, were justifiably more angry at Abreu than over the person who got the actual error on that play last night. Jerry Pena has a bad throw to first, and we are all angry at Jose Abreu. Joe Mixon looks like a running back.
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't Stephon Diggs been an oppressor yet? He's going to shame anybody in advance who doesn't like the uniform reveal. He is done with the missionary position.
Yeah.
And what was the last one? I said Larry likes, and then H-I, and then it trailed off.
Oh, yeah.
There's a flurry of note-keeping.
I was watching your note-keeping while I was listening to the call.
You were trying to take up for the missionary position. You lost the plot.
Why hasn't Stephon Diggs had a press conference? Why haven't we heard from him yet?
Why hasn't Stephon Diggs, and did anybody ask yesterday if Stephon Diggs was there?
No, I didn't see any attendance questions.
I didn't see any of the, it was, I thought that would have been like the number one, the first question asked.
Yeah.
Or one of the first ones.
Well, especially because it's not just Stephon Diggs. I mean, like Laremy Tunsil, like, do we have confirmation he's not there? Or do we just assume that he's not there because he doesn't do the voluntary stuff, you know?
I feel like they're a little bit, everything's very touchy these days with attendance at OTAs, and teams are very, they don't want to ever make it look like they're shaming somebody for not being there. So I don't know. Maybe they talk to the people in advance before that. I don't know. It's weird. I was surprised that the question wasn't answered. I try not to kill the people who are actually asking the questions at the press conference because it's harder than it seems, and they're the ones who are actually there. So whatever. But I was surprised that wasn't asked.
Because the answer to us could always be, well, why don't you go and ask the question?
Yeah, exactly. Right. No. And it is. Well, I know that sometimes, you know what happens is people have their questions. There's a few people there asking questions, and they kind of got in their minds what they want to get out. And I think sometimes they assume that somebody else is going to ask that question. And then all of a sudden 15 minutes pass by and like one of the more relevant questions wasn't asked.
Yeah. So. I am curious if Diggs is there. I'm very curious why we haven't heard from him yet since becoming a Houston Texan. You know,
is he like in training or something? Is he doing media training?
Seems odd.
They're role playing in case he gets asked certain questions or whatever.
I didn't follow his press conference demeanor that much in Buffalo. Was he a guy who got chippy with the media?
I know that people up in Buffalo, for one, remember there was that off mic moment or off camera moment where there was a Bill staffer was heard to say that he can be a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
He can be a handful. So there was that. And then there was what the people up in Buffalo said that he, He does a little bit of the old Bill O'Brien Southern Belle of like, hey, ask me anything. But then when you ask him that, right. he gets upset that you asked him that
That's
question.
Right.
Yeah. I'll talk about anything, but not that, damn
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of, there was a little bit of tempestuousness sometimes in press conferences.
Tempestuousness. That's a great word. All right. If Jim,
I got to keep up with CJ.
If Jim Crane, I know, worldly, tempestuous. Let's circle back to what Larry was saying about Jose Abreu to a degree. If Jim Crane were an actual general manager, how close would he be to getting fired right now?
Ooh.
That is next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so we talked about this earlier this week. It seems like maybe the punishment for the sign stealing was sort of a tipping point for Jim Crane getting more actively involved in the day-to-day operations of the team. I think it feels that way. Like, it feels like Jeff Luhnow kind of operated autonomously. He did his thing, and he did a great job of it.
Maybe a little too autonomously at times.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, obviously.
Therein lies the situation we're in. I think that Jim Crane felt like, okay, a little bit more oversight would have been maybe a good thing.
Which I think is great. The issue may be, though, that Jim Crane has been getting more involved in the parts of overseeing things that Jeff Luhnow was really good at, you know, and
it's like when the investors step in and decide they want to direct the porn movie.
Yeah,
you know, they're like, oh wait, it's all right. Listen, yes, sir. Yeah, okay, we understand, but it's not the choice sure. we would make. And just yeah,
or
yeah.
the company or the porn movie, either one. Yeah,
right.
So Jim Crane. I think obviously there was a period of time where he and Jeff Bagwell and others were the general manager. There was no general manager. They were operating that way and making signings and so forth.
It was Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby.
Yes, yes.
It was, you didn't actually have, that was the problem with the whole scenario there with Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby, was that they were acting as GMs and there still was no actual GM.
Yep.
Yeah.
So my question is, if Jim Crane were an actual GM, if we take the sum total of the moves that I feel like he has, like, the majority of the control over, if not total control over, he's the owner. If he were an actual GM, if we were judging him like he were a GM, not an owner, because he's kind of immune to the sort of judgment we're about to talk about, you can't fire him. If he were an actual GM, how close would he be to getting fired right now? And I'll point out that the list of negatives outweighs the list of positives. Like this,
so we're taking over from the time he took over for James Click, who was fired for winning a World Series.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Okay. You fired your GM after winning a World Series. What's your next move, new GM?
Yes. Yeah. And
you gotta sign up Michael Brantley, right? Immediately. The first thing you have to do is sign up Michael Brantley.
Who had a shoulder issue at the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he was 73 years old.
Yeah, so I'm going to put Jose Abreu, Rafael Montero, and Michael Brantley. I think that's viewed as like one sort of three-headed offseason. Like that, yeah. That's like this triumvirate of moves where people are like, what were we doing here? What were we doing?
One of those, only one of those things right now is like actively really annoying you, I would say.
Abreu? Yeah, Montero, I said it earlier in the show, there's nothing Montero can do in the role he's in right now that justifies $11.5 million salary.
That's not
his fault.
It's a bad contract, but it's not like it's the performance so far compared to last year. You know, it's not necessarily as much of a thorn in your side, but the Abreu one is really annoying.
Abreu's losing games for you. I mean, you're having a role in games being lost. He's not single-handedly losing games, but he is contributing to losses above replacement. He is very, very high in the league right now, if there were such a thing. So that offseason is sort of the, you know, that's the one everybody points to. I would say that a few more things, Seth, like the Hader deal. This Hader deal needs to work out. He needs to become a hammer at the back of the bullpen. And this is a 5-year deal, man. We are 18 games into a 5-year deal, and Josh Hader looks a little lost right now, more than a little.
Right. Yeah. And honestly, too, yes, it is early into this. I don't expect him to finish the season with a 7+ ERA. But you do have to point out, you know, in 2022, he had a 5.22 ERA. In 56 games pitched. It wasn't like he's had an unblemished, gleaming record of consistency. That was the worst year of his career, and maybe you write that off because of injuries or what have you. But, man, it's not unprecedented that he would have a really bad year, and because he had one 2 years ago.
Yep. So that's at the very – I mean, it's obviously incomplete, but that's troubling right now. Almost as a correlation to Hader is you let the middle of the bullpen crater. You know, you're leaning on a lot of guys. You're trusting in a lot of guys who don't have the big league chops to take on the roles that they're being asked to do, whether it's at the back end of the rotation where you knew you had injuries, or whether it's the middle of the bullpen where you knew guys were going to be leaving for greener pastures like Hector Neris and Philip Maton and Ryan Stanek.
Yeah. I mean,
you're just letting if the pitching staff were a house, you're letting it fall into some degree of disrepair right now.
Right. You're just like, okay, I see things that are issues, and I'm just going to let it go. Sure, that gutter could be hanging about a little more tight up, but what's the deal? It's just a gutter.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of it's just a gutter going on
right
now with the Astros pitching staff. Yeah.
And there is no leaf filter on the way, Flying mentioned. Yeah. The contractual limbo with Alex Bregman, Kyle Tucker, and Framber Valdez, that to me is 100% a Jim Crane thing. You know, like he's the one that's dug in, and he's got a number of years, he's got a number salary-wise, and ultimately, if and when those contracts either get blessed or they don't sign those guys, that ain't Dana Brown. That's Jim
an interesting
Crane.
One, because if we were looking at Jim Crane as the GM, then what would we be saying? Would we be blaming the owner for not going even further into the luxury tax? Because he is one of the top three. It's hard for me to separate this from the owner side of it, ownership side of it, because they're in the top three in spending in MLB this year. Obviously, they're distant third, but they're top three in spending in MLB, and they don't have the market and the revenue of a Mets or a Yankees or some of the big of the Dodgers, obviously. So that part I have a hard time being hypercritical over. Like they're in that position of having a lot of talented guys to be paid.
Agreed. I'm putting it out there. I'm with you on that. That's low. It's low on the list. Where are we on the Verlander trade right now? I was in favor of it last year. I guess we probably need to see what he looks like when he gets back on the mound. But they gave up two prime prospects to get Justin Verlander.
You gave up two prime prospects, and you're not allowed to use injuries as an excuse when you're dealing with a 40-year-old. Like, no, you signed the 40-year-old. Just like when you signed Brantley, he was aging and he had a known issue. That was a bad sign. That was a sentimental signing. That was sentimentality and nothing more. Like, you couldn't wait until... Was everybody just so eager to snap up Michael Brantley at that point?
Right.
You just had to sign him in December? So, with Verlander, a lot of it just depends on how healthy he finishes the season. Mm-hmm. If he ends up banged up and just not available consistently, if he doesn't show up for the playoffs, then that was a really bad trade, ultimately.
I would say the things that I would give Jim Crane credit for over the last couple years would be the signings, like the Yordan Alvarez signing to get him signed in through 2028 at $20 million a year. Looks like it's going to be one of the most incredible bargains in the sport. And if Christian Javier is back to what he was, some semblance of what he was in 2022, that too is going to be a really good signing. I think Jim Crane, when guys have decided, like, yeah, I'm willing to do a deal to buy out my arbitration years, it's largely worked out pretty well for the Astros. You know, I know Bregman had a peak in 2019 and then a couple injury-prone years. I think by and large, Alex Bregman, you know, the 6 years, $100 million that he got, I think, especially given how the team has performed in the postseason, that's been not a great signing, but a good sign. I think Jordan's going to prove to be like a Jordan might prove to be like an Andre Johnson situation, where like Andre had that bad contract.
They end up tearing it up and giving him a new deal.
Altuve, they did the same thing. Altuve signed a deal where it's like, all right, this guy just won the MVP and he's going to make $5 million next year.
I think, honestly, since we're going on based on very limited results so far and we're talking about Hader, like I'm almost literally peeing my pants over the chance that Hader is as bad this year as he was in 2022. Altuve, you have to give credit for the fact that, you could have accused you could say, okay, the Altuve signing was a sentimental one, or it's almost guaranteed to. But if we're going on the short-term returns, he's got a 1,200 OPS. Yeah. He's batting .403. Mm-hmm. He's been the best offensive player on your team in a lot of regards so early in the season. So far, so good on that one, obviously. And I fully, when you sign a guy at that age to a medium-term contract, you don't expect the last couple of years to be gleaming, but that's the price you pay.
No, and they're only paying him $10 million those last 2 years. You know, the way they structured the deal, they kind of front-loaded it. So I'm with you. The Altuve signing positive. I guess just to get back to the original question, if Jim Crane were an actual GM, how close would he be to getting fired? I think that if he were the actual GM making all these moves and there was just some owner who's not getting involved in stuff, if they missed the playoffs this year, this GM would be fired after the season. GM did things that this GM will have done things that will have limited the window, not extended the window necessarily. And I think if the Astros were to miss, I don't think Dana Brown's getting fired at the end of the year if they miss the postseason, because I don't think they're going to blame him. I think Dana Brown's here more to build up the minor league system than he is to make all these moves we're talking about here, because that's his background.
Yeah.
But I think if Jim Crane, if he were making these moves and were not the owner, he were the GM, he'd be fired if they missed the playoffs this year.
I'll tell you two things right now to try to keep perspective on things. I do this sometimes when I want to just get as objective an opinion as possible. I know that's a onomatopoeia, but as objective an opinion as possible, I go to the Vegas odds and just take a guess at where the Astros are in terms of World Series odds right now. Where do they rank amongst MLB teams in likelihood to win the World
Series? These are up-to-date odds right now that you're looking at. Okay. I'm going to say they're in the top 10 still, I would guess.
Fourth.
Yeah.
They're plus, just according to Bet365. Let me look. The consensus fourth best team based on like all these very
they blend them all together.
The Phillies, it goes Dodgers, Braves, Yankees, Astros, Phillies, Rangers, Orioles, Twins.
The betting markets are not panicking on this. That's our job to panic on this stuff here on Sports Talk Radio. I'm glad you brought that up. I was curious about that last night. I'm like, man, I wonder, like, do you if you had to guess, are we talking about this as the fourth best team in baseball, or do you think they, a month from now, where are they on those odds boards?
A month from now, boy, how healthy is the pitching going to be?
You're going to get Fromber and Justin Verlander back.
These are the things that, depending on pitcher health, then I think they'll stay there. The biggest question right now is, I think as long as they continue, like honestly, if you ignore the actual runs scored and runners in scoring position, everything, they've been hitting the ball really well.
Yes.
And they're like, in a lot of respects, they're one of the best hitting teams in baseball, just without having scored as many runs as some of the other teams. A lot of it hinges on Hader, Presley, the other relievers, really more so than anything else. I can weather a Brave. They can be the top-ranked team in terms of World Series odds with Abreu playing the way he is right now. It's everything else, including and a little dose of Bregman in there as well.
Yes, Bregman too, It's the bullpen's been the inverse of what we thought it was going to be. You know, like the back end is a nightmare. And the middle part of the relief, it was shaky at the beginning of the year, but it's been better now. Like, Seth Martinez has been really good. Brandon Belak's been fine. Rafael Montero's been good. That back end of the bullpen, though, man, Presley and Hader, that's been problematic. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday here. Let's circle back to the Texans. A week from today, they reveal the new uniforms. Few people have had a chance to see them, including the players and coaches. Let's get the report card on the new unis from coach and prominent players. That is next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. New uniforms coming a week from today.
I've heard of this.
Yeah. I don't know if you know this, Seth, but the Texans have been kind of dropping some hints about the uniforms. There's a great video. I haven't had a chance to watch the whole thing yet. It's about 15 minutes long about just the whole process behind this and whatnot. It's interesting stuff.
They go way back. Like, some of the highlights, they go through the entire history of the franchise.
Yeah.
There was one in there. I was like, is that Keith Mitchell? My God.
Yeah. So they're going to be revealed, I believe, on social media next Tuesday. And then there's the party for it, which you have to have tickets to get to at 713 Music Hall later that day on Tuesday on the 23rd. Players and coaches, it sounds like, have seen them. We know some of the players have posed in them. We saw pictures of Nico Collins and Tank Dell with the one white uniform that's been leaked. There's three other versions of the uniform that are going to be revealed. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday on the new uniforms.
Yeah, I'm fired up about the new uniforms. It's 2024, time for a fresh look for the Texans. I know we've had the same uniforms, all right, since our organization started here in 2002. I was messing with the guys earlier about I wore the same uniform that they were wearing, and I think it's time for an update. And credit to Doug, Cal, Hannah, all the work and time that went into coming out with the new look. I think our fans will be excited about it. I think the coolest part about the new uniforms, as you guys all know, is having our fans' input into the look of our new uniform. I thought that was pretty cool, pretty unique by organization, being able to talk to our fans and get a true feel for what our fans wanted to see. And, of course, our players are fired up about the new look. So it'll be an exciting reveal for next week everyone.
Yeah, it'll be cool.
I like the fact that you said that you guys are wearing the same uniforms that we used to. Even if you're not into it, there's something about just getting, so like, you know, like when you get your new school clothes in September, you're not being into fashion and everything, but oh, cool. I got some acid wash bugle boys. All right. Yeah, maybe girls will talk to me this year. I just thought some of these poor young Houston Texans players just want girls to talk to them,
you know? True, yeah.
And they're running around in their hand-me-downs from D'Amico.
Right.
Some of those guys are out there in pants that have patches on them that are handed down from D'Amico to Whitney Merciless to any other fit to Kenyon Green now.
Why are you crying, CJ? Why are you crying, CJ? Because I need a new Color Rush uniform.
Yeah,
all the kids have better Color Rush uniforms than me. Speaking of CJ, here was CJ on the new uniforms.
I think they're cool. You know, I think they're definitely, I don't want to say too much, but I think people like them and really excited. I think that even brings a new, energy to, you know, NRG, which is kind of ironic. But, you know, I think I'm super excited just to be wearing new stuff. I liked the unis last year, too, you know, but I think it's time for change. And, you know, it's a new era now, and we'll be able to build with these unis and look good while doing it.
Good job by CJ to not give in to the temptation to say, see what I did there after NRG and NRG right there.
Mm-hmm.
He acknowledged the irony of it, but then he moved on. Good job,
bringing
CJ.
Bringing some new energy to NRG.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know what? Because they're wearing the same uniforms from when it was Reliant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think like maybe a time to change it would have been when they switched to NRG,
mm-hmm.
which was how many years ago now? 10 years or so?
It's been a while.
They switched.
Yep.
I hope they go super gaudy. I hope that it ends up being like just the like old Royal Navy captain type, like stupid looking uniform, like some of those stupid old British uniforms where you're like, you're just begging to get a saber in your chest, you stupid old cow. Because you got it. It takes confidence to pull that off.
Yes. Yes. I don't know. I like
that. I take it back. My hatred of the British won't allow me to do that. Anyway, so I hope it's like one of the dumbest versions of American military uniforms.
There you go. There you go. One more. Here's Will Anderson. Will Anderson, we need to paint the picture here, right, Seth? Will Anderson was asked about it.
Will Anderson was asked about it. And he did the old zipped lip sign.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to say a damn thing about it.
He wasn't going to be a leaker. You weren't going to find anything from Will Anderson that got leaked on the internet like the white uni did. Here's Will.
I think they're dope. I think it really just gives back to the Houston community. I think it really does a really good job of getting the community back involved with football, back involved with, you know, the Texans brand of ball. And I'm really excited for everybody to see them. I know it was a little leak out there, but I'm really excited for everybody to get a chance to see what they got going on here.
Will Anderson, Seth, respects a good non-disclosure agreement.
He does. He did the zipped lip, but then he gave, like, I was curious to see what he would follow that with, because if there's one thing that Will doesn't do well, he doesn't make things boring. Like, he is every press conference from every player and coach ever, I'm like, all right, 90% of this I'm going to be kind of bored by. But Will, as I said on my live stream yesterday, Will Anderson can make a cliche sound like a Robert Frost poem. Like, it just, you're like, oh, this is mellifluous. Oh, yeah. Oh, this is beautiful what he's saying. But he basically didn't say anything at all. I was a little bit worried that CJ and Will, in the way they talked about the uniforms, they sounded kind of underwhelmed. But I think that was them being afraid of leaking anything further than it had already been leaked.
Yeah.
They went back to the old Bill O'Brien, I'm just trying to be the best teammate I can be version of a media appearance.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of Will... talking poetically about the Texans. Here is Will Anderson echoing what D'Amico Ryan said about expectations.
The expectations in the Texans have always been the same. No matter the outside noise, no matter the media, any of that, like, we have a standard that we have to play to. We have a mentality that we play to, and that's the only thing that we have to play to is everything that happens in this building. And I would just say complacency is no place for that here at all. What we did last year was last year. What we're going to do this year is what we're going to do this year. And we can't focus on the past. So right now, it's just keeping that same mentality, and that's the swarm mentality. When all that fails, what are we going to do? We're going to go out there and swarm. And so that's what type of team we're going to be heading to this new season.
I love how swarm gets treated like as a break glass in case of emergency sometimes. What are we going to do? I don't
swarm.
Know. Swarm. Swarm.
It is. I mean, that's the only thing that kept me from being driven insane by how many missed tackles the Texans had last year was that it is, as long as there are some defensive coaches that'll tell you just shoot your shot, you know, and that as long as you got other guys coming up behind you, it's okay if you miss, because it at least slows the guy down enough that the next two or three guys get to him. So it's a group effort. Like, you have to be able to trust that everybody else is doing the same thing. And by and large, they did that last year. It was one of the better improvements the Texans made, was that they actually lived out the swarm mentality.
Yeah.
It erases mistakes as long as you can always swarm.
One more from Will Anderson. Not everybody can be a Houston Texan.
Yeah, it was a lot at the Pro Bowl, man. It was a lot of guys like, yeah, tell them I'm trying to come over there. Like, tell D'Amico I'm saying, but I'm like, Texas ain't for everybody, man. It's a different type of DNA you have to have to play here, man. It's a different type of character you have to have. And you just got to love football, man. And I think, you know, the front office and coach, they do a really good job of choosing the guys that they want to be in here that, you know, can help change the culture and help keep uplifting the culture and, you know, being a positive impact, not only on the building, but in the locker room as well.
Yeah.
I think him telling people at the Pro Bowl that, like, I don't know if you're Texans worthy. You got to have a certain kind of DNA. I know you're at the Pro Bowl and
right.
all, but I don't know. I don't know if he was mixing. I would love it if he actually said that to somebody at the Pro Bowl. If he was like, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's for you. I don't know. It's kind of like,
that would,
you know,
be
how
so
they do
awesome.
You know, like they do with the Marine recruiting commercials.
Yeah.
Those are meant to appeal to a certain type of kid.
Yep.
You know, like, there's not everybody's going to watch a Marine recruiting commercial and be like, well, golly, this looks like a swell life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they want somebody that's got a little bit of that that good sickness in them, right?
Yes.
If you want to join the Marines, I feel like that's what Will is doing with his Texans commercial. He wants a little bit of a sicko in the guy that wants to come to the Texans.
I feel like it's going to be real key for us to have a few guys at the Pro Bowl now every year. You know, like it. Yeah. Now I'd rather the Texans go to the Super Bowl and then not have to go to the Pro Bowl, because if you make the Super Bowl, you don't attend the Pro Bowl. But man. It feels like this. It feels like, Seth, someday if there's like a mini 30 for 30 done on the Texans 2024 offseason, you know, just like a nice little 30-minute special, that the 2024 Pro Bowl will have its own like 4 or 5 minutes in there, and the importance, how important it was to talk to Stephon Diggs, and how important it was to weed out David Njoku and tell him why we don't really need you, bro. Like,
right,
I know you
want
to become a Texan. I'm just picking on David Njoku.
You know what? I was kind of trying to figure out who at the Pro Bowl might have been at a position the Texans needed to replace or what have you.
Yeah.
Justin Tucker. Or maybe Justin Tucker was
a kicker.
I don't know. Yeah. Justin Tucker, the kicker for the Ravens, probably like, yeah, see, Kaimi's not signed back up yet. What's up with that? And Will was like, no, bro. Nah, fam. You're not Texans worthy. I don't care about your all-time record for this or that, okay? You're not worthy, damn it.
You dropped this name earlier, just kind of as you... It might have been off the air while you and I were going through this here. Quinnen Williams, man.
Quinnen Williams.
Williams.
You tried to steal my bro's brain.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's
We almost had to scoop his brain out of his ears with an ice cream scoop.
That's right.
You concussed him. No,
but
you're not Texans worthy.
But that's
not the right...
Position of need and a guy who's on a team where he might want to get the hell out of there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Plays in the same defense, right? Robert Saleh's defense, D'Amico Ryan's defense.
That's right, yeah.
You know? Okay. All right. I'm going to have to go shopping.
Any of the
today.
Chiefs? Well, none of the Chiefs were there, so we couldn't have told, you know, Pat Mahomes to
how great,
off or
dude,
anything
how
like
great
that.
Would it be if it was Sauce Gardner? How awesome would that have been if it was Sauce Gardner?
That would
have
been pretty cool. You know, like, yeah, if Sauce Gardner was like, yeah, I like what you got going down there. Robert Saleh, I'm not sure that he's my guy, or what do you think?
Right.
Me and Derek Stingley together. And he said,
sweet.
I don't know, man. I don't know if you're the right kind of DNA.
That'd be sweet. Okay? Brandon Scott just jumped in studio here. Do you see what Seth and I are doing here,
yeah,
Brandon?
Yeah, I like the idea of Sauce Gardner wanting to play for the better version of Robert Saleh.
There you go.
You know,
the
like
better
the,
version
for the team that was ridiculed for not drafting Sauce Gardner at one time.
Yeah. And then
you know
that would also solve our lingering question of the corner opposite side of Derek Stingley.
We would
be talking about the corner opposite side of Sauce Gardner.
It would
flip the narrative completely.
Yep.
That is actually, you know, as much as I guess maybe just because it's so hard to do. You don't like people love that the thought of having a top one and two wide receiver, top one and two, like all of these other positions. If you had like the two genuinely best cornerbacks in the league at any given time, or like two top five cornerbacks in the league that could just lock people down, man, that is a nightmare for opposing
interesting.
Offensive coordinators.
There would be no excuse for not having a double digit sack guy.
Yeah.
You should have at least one, if not maybe two.
Yep.
I like the fact that you. What did you call Robert Saleh compared to D'Amico Ryans? Poor man's version.
Yeah, the lesser version of D'Amico Ryans. Yeah,
it is. You know, you can make the argument, and I like Robert Saleh. I know him just from when he was a quality control guy with the Texans. But you know, he was not an NFL linebacker like D'Amico Ryans. There's a chance that his muscles are simply gym muscles that don't have functional strength. Whereas with D'Amico, like those are some bust you over the head muscles right
yes.
there.
Yeah,
he does all of those bleacher runs, right?
Yeah.
He does. He runs
oh, yeah.
up the bleachers. Robert Saleh
for
does, but he ain't never put his hand in the dirt.
That's right.
Mm.
That's right.
Mm.
Not at the NFL level for sure.
Right.
So Landry Locker is here. Hey, what did you guys think of C.J. Stroud's first pitch yesterday?
It was perfect. What do you mean?
It was right down the middle.
It was right up there with Bush's after 9/11.
I thought his throwing motion was interesting.
Well, so... Right? Just a notch below the 9/11 first pitch with the bulletproof vest on.
So I didn't notice it as much with the actual first pitch itself, but did y'all notice
Brandon
on the side?
Just stepped on the line, man. Show killer.
Oh, what did you have? Was that funny? I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Break it down for me.
I was just going to say his throwing motion looked exactly like he throws the football.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it looks exactly like he throws the football.
That's true. I guess that's
I wasn't into the Bush pitch. I was not on the edge of my seat in 2001 George Bush's pitch.
Should have broke down the throwing motion.
I'm sorry.
Bush's pitch was a better throwing motion by pitchers.
It was a more conventional baseball.
And he also was wearing
motion.
A bulletproof vest, so it adds to
degree
the,
of
it
difficulty.
Yeah, it adds to the legend of
degree
it.
Degree of difficulty. I just thought his throwing motion was a little peculiar, but yeah, I think you're right. It's the same one he does where he's got the towel in his hand before the game, right?
Yeah.
He's whipping that towel.
Yeah, the towel.
It looked exactly like he throws the football.
Yeah. He stuck around for a lot of that game, too.
Yeah, Josh Hader crushed his spirit.
Yeah.
He was planning on staying the whole damn game, and Josh Hader killed his spirit. He stayed. He stayed till the ninth.
He did.
And then as soon as Hader gave up that fourth hit, he took a picture with some fans, and he dipped out.
Yeah, man. Josh Hader.
Do we know that he dipped out, or did he just go up and enjoy the buffet a little bit?
I think the buffet is over at that point. It was the ninth inning. The buffet is...
He knows people. He knows people.
Tell you something about... Yeah, the buffet is never closed for C.J. Stroud. Not in this town.
Fair.
God help you if I find out you closed the buffet on C.J. Stroud.
That's right.
Damn it.
But he did...
If he comes in at 9 p.m. on a Wednesday and wants brunch, you serve him brunch.
It's open. Omelet bar, open. Yep.
He did the appropriate thing, which is keep his head in his phone, though, because it's not like the game was that interesting. Every time they showed C.J. Stroud, it did not look like he was paying attention.
He was with his mom, right?
And
his
mom was I can't say I blame him.
No. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.